This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. We're thrilled today to be joined by Anthony Viceroy. Anthony is the CEO of the WestMed Medical Group. WestMed is one of the larger medical groups in the country and very successful. Anthony, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Sure, Scott. So first of all, thank you for having me today. As you mentioned, I am the CEO of WestMed. I've been part of WestMed since 2012. Before assuming the CEO role in 2015, I actually joined WestMed's management service company called WestMed Practice Partners. And then as part of that management team, I helped to sell the MSO to Optum in 2014. I stayed with Optum as president of the MSO for a relatively short period of time before assuming my current role at WestMed. Before joining WestMed, I spent about 10 years at Omnicom Group, which is a Fortune 200 marketing and communications company. My last few years at Omnicom was with a company called Porter Novelli, which is a global public relations firm, a subsidiary of Omnicom, where I was the president of the company. And then prior to Omnicom, I spent about 5 years as treasurer of North America for the global biopharmaceutical company Novo Nordisk. And then earlier in my career, I spent various amounts of time.
But quite a transition and pivot. Talk about the pivot from those industries into running a great medical group. Talk about what that was like, what that pivot was like, and so forth.
Sure. So yes, it's not the ordinary track. What I would say is it's interesting is that as you go along the way and you gain experience and you learn from so many different, individuals, as well as just being in different industries, there is a crossover of, how to lead, how to manage, how to drive results, critically thinking through, strategy, and then how do you execute and operationalize that strategy? So there is a lot of crossover, but also there are obviously nuances within each and every industry. And it does take a certain amount of time to learn all those nuances. I will say healthcare, when I joined in 2012, just seemed to be so far behind many of the other industries that I came out of. Still trying to play catch up 8 years later. It just seems it's a much slower industry, one that is really risk adverse, obviously heavily regulated, but certainly is prime for disruptive innovation. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that in the coming, years. If nothing else, I think COVID really has, leveled the playing field and really showed that you have to be extremely nimble and innovative in order to get through a global pandemic.
And you've had this remarkable career. You're an accounting major by background, graduate degree, worked in different industries, now leading up a great, great medical group. What advice do you give people trying to have great careers or to emerging leaders? What advice do you give people who are trying to figure out their own careers and what to do with them?
Yeah, I've gotten so much career advice over the years. I think, it always starts with, having a good, mentor. And if you can't find someone who's really willing to mentor you, it's just having someone that you can bounce your ideas off of. I wish I had someone explain to me when I was coming up, follow your passion. When I was coming up, you just were, kind of took roles and worked really hard. And you worked your way up and you kind of learned the business, so to speak. And, you either would move up or you would move on. And that was kind of the model. I think today it's a very different, environment, especially, different generations and their length of service. I mean, when I was coming up, you stayed at a company for, years before you would even think about transitioning out. And, today you see most young professionals transition out, sometimes even less than a year. And that's the norm. So I think you have to have a deep interest in what you think you will enjoy. And, I think the old adage of just working really hard still applies. I don't think there's any shortcuts, even with, digital and technology being what it is. You still have to learn your craft and you have to build relationships with people. So all of those are, to me, are just still the fundamentals of how to be successful.
Magnificent. And so interesting, right? Because when we grew up, if I told, and I'm probably in the same vintage as you, if I told my father and mother, well, I'm going to just follow my passion, I think my father might have just smacked me, literally. It would have been like, follow your passion, go get a law degree and accounting degree, then you can follow whatever you want. But if I said I'm following my passion, he would have smacked me. And now if I tell my kids, don't follow your passion, they think I'm a dinosaur. So it's a fascinating type of difference in perspective, 30, 40, 50 years later. Talk to me, Anthony, about multi-specialty groups. How have multi-specialty groups fared through COVID? Talk a little bit about how it's gone. Not so much the clinical care delivery, but tell us how it's looked financially for multi-specialty groups and how it's going.
Sure. So, WestMed, like other medical groups, we made a conscious decision around where we needed to focus our resources. Our providers, staff, we all worked very closely, not only with our infectious disease experts, to make certain that we continue to offer, the community information, right? So if you think back in the early stage here in New York in March, there was just a tremendous amount of misinformation coming out. And we wanted to make sure that we were still able to provide care. So we focused our resources, really to ensure that we were able to have outreach to patients because most patients were not coming in. Especially when the governor of New York every day was saying how dangerous it was to go out. So we knew that not coming in for preventative care and screenings and things like that, certainly has an economic impact on your business, but I would say even more importantly, has a detrimental impact on patient care and, what they, may get later on by avoiding this care. So we really wanted to spend a lot of time trying to think through how do we reach those patients that have, multiple chronic diseases. Maybe they have, more of a complex subgroup of patients, because we knew it was going to be very important to try to reach them and provide the best care that we were able to. So we quickly shifted to virtual visits, which I'm sure is no different than what you've heard now probably from every guest since COVID started. But for us, we've always had it, but in this market, it wasn't something that was really prevalent. And within a matter of 2 days, we had to shift everyone. It was not just the technology, it was getting your physicians trained, and more importantly, it was even getting your patients comfortable to utilize this technology. And at the height of COVID, this was our platform of how we were delivering care probably for about 6 to 8 weeks. And I would say over, a 3 to 4 month period, we've probably done in excess of 80,000 visits, through telehealth. Economically, I think we were probably a little bit ahead of seeing what was going on. I made sure we secured lines of credit and, worked with vendors and, our banks to make sure that I had access to cash, that we were putting in place kind of short-term exceptions to our agreements. So whether that would be with our landlords for rent or other vendors on things that we were leasing, all in an effort to try to preserve cash in case, COVID really was that disruptive. And as we saw, unfortunately, it became that disruptive. But I would say probably by the end of May, you started to see things open up a little bit. And then once June came and the governor lifted the, that elective surgeries were able to resume again, we went the other direction, as I'm sure most medical groups did. We went from basically having no, inpatient volume visiting our clinics to then, demand being probably 150% of normal capacity. And that was also a unique challenge because here we are trying to, recover from a few months of no patient volume in our clinics to then trying to address demand for access, but simultaneously trying to keep patients and our staff safe because COVID was still in the community and still, is now, we're clearly into the second wave. You know, so again, it is a balancing act of how we're trying to, focus on our economics, but also ensure that there's safety and quality in what we're trying to produce.
And Anthony, we're talking the middle of December 2020. How quickly till vaccines start to make a difference in this national nightmare? What's your best guess on how quickly vaccines start to have an impact?
If I knew that, Scott, I would be playing the lotto tonight. It is so hard. I can share with you that, we've applied for, to basically with both, we're in New York and Connecticut. So, the vaccine to become a vaccine administration site. So we're trying to work with the states to get these vaccines. I think logistically, it's still going to be a bit of a challenge on the rollout. The numbers that are coming in are still relatively low. By some estimates, I heard it was probably not going to become normalized till July. I think that's a little bit far. My best guess at this point is I think you're going to start to see February into March that we'll start to have the handle and be able to vaccinate, our patients in a, timely or efficient manner, I should say. And then again, it depends on which vaccine you're going to be able to get, right? So we're, in advance, not knowing which ones would be coming. We've had to increase like refrigeration. So if we do get the Pfizer vaccine, we're able to actually store it and make sure that the vaccine is protected. So again, there's a lot of logistics that go into, this. I think, having a vaccine on in the way and even with limited testing that has happened in clinical trials, it at least is a positive story because there hasn't been that many positive stories in 2020. So I think this gives everyone hope, but I think it's still going to take probably a few months to be able to be rolled out effectively. And then after you do that, I think it's still going to take a little bit of time to really understand, could there be potential side effects? How effective is this? If there is some type of mutation of the virus, will the vaccine, still be able to be effective or not? So again, I think unfortunately, you're still going to see a large COVID conversation in 2021, although I do expect it to be much better than it was in 2020. And and again, I think when you look at the amount of scientists and, the world looking at this, I do think that, you're going to see the next generation of vaccine that will probably be even more effective. So at some point, we're going to get this right. I just think it's a little bit early stage right now.
No, absolutely. And I try and simplify. So what I get from you, it's a work in process. Go play the lotto tonight. And by February, March, we're starting to make real progress. It's really the simple answer that I get. And I think that sounds about right. And I don't know what the lottery looks like in where you're at in New York or Connecticut. Certainly the lottery in Illinois seems impossible to win. So it is what it is. We'll stick to betting on February, March, really starting to feel a lot better and starting to be a little bit muted. And obviously the sooner we get lots of people vaccinated, the less people that can get the infection, or the less people that can spread the infection, the better shape we're in. So we give it a couple months and the supply chains really start to roll in the right direction is I think a great guesstimate. I want to thank you, Anthony, for joining us today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. What a great pleasure to visit with you and hear more about what you're doing in Westmed Medical Group and what a remarkable career you've had. Thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much, Scott. I appreciate you having me on and, continued success to you. And please stay well as, we're going to be in this, in this pandemic for a little bit longer, but hopefully in the near future, we'll be able to resume our normal lives.
Well, let's hope so. Thank you so much.